Okay, shall we begin?
Yep.
We start a study of to the Hebrews. Pros Hebraeos in Greek. Who wrote it? What's it about? What would we find in it? All of which is a fascinating story. The letter to the Hebrews is written anonymously. It starts right in the content, doesn't say who it's from. Why would that be? Well, if you ask in church history who wrote it, it would depend on which area of the ancient world you ask in. If you ask in the eastern part of the ancient world, they would tell you quite definitely. They have an opinion. You ask in the western part of the ancient world, around Rome and thereabouts, and everybody in the western church, they would say, we don't know. There's all kinds of people that could have all kinds of theories. So in the western church, everything ranges from Paul, Apollos, Luke, Silvanus, Timothy, on and on and on it goes. The letter to the Hebrews was accepted right away as scripture in the Eastern world. In the Western world, they were dragged very reluctantly into acknowledging that it belonged in the Bible. The letter to the Hebrews, where was it written to? Again, opinions differ. One guy says it was written to the same people that Peter wrote his epistles to, which would have been north of Galatia in that area that would now be north and northwest Turkey. I find that a weak idea. Because why would you write something to the Hebrews up there? Another one said it was written to the people in Rome. And then cascading. It was written to a Gentile church. It was written to a church that was mostly Gentiles and some Hebrews. It was written to a church that was mostly Hebrews and some Gentiles. And then the one opinion that seems to match the content of the letter, it was written to the Jews in the Holy Land. Written to the Jews in the Holy Land. Grab a Bible here. And I'll jump to Hebrews chapter 13, where we get some of a hint of what might have been going on. Hebrews 13. Verse 12 and 13, and 14. So Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through his own blood. Verse 13, someone?
Let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace he bore.
For here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. Detail. Sometime around when Paul was in Rome, the non-believing, non-Christian Jews took action to ban and bar the Jews who were Christians from any access to the temple or temple grounds. Think about that. This is the temple, the church of your people, and now you are barred. You are not allowed on the premises. And that may be what that reference is about. It would sting. It would be difficult. What do you do as a believing in God's Messiah, Jew, who's not allowed anywhere near the temple? Do you want to continue in this? Continue in this disgrace? Do you want to turn back? Tough. Very tough. So I find that persuasive that it's written to the Christians who are in and around Jerusalem of Jewish background who have now been cut off from their people, cut off from their temple, cut off from all of their previous life. Okay, then back to the question. Who wrote it?
Well, the last part of 13, it sounds like Paul, because he's talking about Timothy.
Who would have wrote a letter and done it anonymously? May I suggest, it would have been somebody who didn't want his name on the document, because if his name was on the document, some of the people that could benefit from hearing what he had to say would just rip it up. Who in New Testament times would have had such things associated with his name? Only one name Paul. Comes to mind.
Jesus?
No. Paul. Paul. Yeah. And he's writing a letter to the Hebrews, to the Jews. And he is arguing, and the whole argument is, why is it that we believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, that the new covenant replaces the old, that it is time for us to be Christian, to abandon some of the old ways, to go with Christ, to accept the reproach, if it is given to us, and be willing to be outside the camp and bearing that reproach. Those are tough topics. And if you want to write your fellow Jewish countrymen and advocate in that way, and your name happens to be Paul, you might want to leave your name off of it. And then analyzing the content of the letter to the Hebrews. There is some hint that it was first composed in the Hebrew language and then was translated into Greek, which, well, who did the translating? The Eastern Church will say it was a collaboration. A collaboration of Paul and somebody who helped him to put it into good Greek. Who would have done that? And then the commentaries go through and they analyze the word forms and the phrases, and is there anybody else in the Bible that uses those particular word forms and types of phrasing, and they come up with an answer to that one.
Luke.
Which is why in parts the letter to the Hebrews is difficult Greek, because Luke writes in very, very educated Greek and uses word forms that you don't find anywhere else in the New Testament. When I was back at senior college and the assignment was read and translate the book of Acts. It's
book?
Heavy sledding. No.
Would you like translating an
just
insurance
half
disclaimer.
Half a chapter.
We hereby for therefore with now
herewith.
No, yeah. it's a longer words that are obscure forms of the words.
Right.
That you have to figure out what are these. And then words where it happens in Greek as it happens in Hebrew, the root word almost disappears when you conjugate it a certain way. And you have to know what letters aren't there anymore in order to figure out what word it is.
Yeah.
He was a doctor.
Yep.
Understand what they write.
Yeah.
So.
Too smart for the rest of us. Yeah.
So, I got these commentaries. Franz Delitzsch, mid-1800s. He's a Lutheran Jew.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be fun to talk.
He's Lutheran of Jewish background. Mm-hmm. For him, the Hebrew is just, well, that's my native language. What's the problem with you? You can't read this? So he's writing in German, and he's dropping in Greek and Hebrew and Aramaic, or Arabic, not Aramaic, Arabic. And it's a fun read where you have to let your mind back off from any particular language and just go with the flow. And so it is translated into English, the German part.
Not the rest.
But as it goes along, mid-sentence, bloop, into Hebrew, back out of Hebrew. Oh, there's some Latin. Back out of the Latin, drop a little bit of Aramaic or Arabic. And I can...
Aramaic, you could...
I know the alphabet of Hebrew, Aramaic, Latin, of course, Arabic.
Not so much.
They're called cognate languages, Hebrew, Aramaic, and a number of others. Which means the letters and the sounds carry across the language. Arabic has in its alphabet a dozen brand new letters that are in English 3 and 4 letters long. Mm-hmm. And it's... I have no clue, except that I have no clue. So when it goes into Arabic, I'm lost. So Delitzsch reports this. Eastern Church, no question, written by Paul. Who helped him translate? He holds back on that a little bit. It could have been Luke, could have been Apollos, could have been somebody else, but... He finally settles on, hey, this looks like a Luke form of the word. Okay. And then we get into the commentary. This will be an examination of who is Jesus and what has he done according to the Hebrew perspective on the Old Testament. There are some things that are brand new for me in digging into this. Some insights that they were fun to discover.
Till midnight one night.
Yeah. Why exactly is this psalm a messianic psalm? Doesn't look like it to me, but why is it? That's one of the insights. By the way, here's a book, Paul and Palestinian Judaism. Here's another book, Paul and Rabbinic Judaism. People have written books trying to figure out Paul's Jewish background without assuming that the letter to the Hebrews was written by Paul. Hmm? So just taking the other letters of Paul and saying, what does this teach us about his Hebrew patterns of thought? Well, we get to look at Hebrews and say, if this is from Paul, this is the way that he organizes and sorts out his thinking as a Jew, which will be a bit different from how he's writing his other letters. Those are written to the Gentiles. Sign language, call it code switching. Yeah. He's going to talk slower and in much plainer, simpler language for us goy. But here he's going to go for it. And make sure you're belted in tight, because
it's going to be a bumpy
fun
ride.
It's fun. Ready to start?
Yep.
Okay. I'll let you guys do the reading of the English. Chapter 1, verse 1.
In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways.
Okay. Actually starts out in many portions and in many ways. Or in many portions and many places. Polymeros, many portions. And polytropos, many ways or places. And he wants to start the letter with great fancy wording. Polymeros, polytropos. In the Old Testament, God reveals things to one person, this portion, to another person, this portion, to another person, this portion, to another person, this portion, and you have to put them all together if you're going to get a clear picture from the Old Testament. Because it's a scattering. Okay? Many portions.
Yes,
polytropos.
Many
and in many places, many ways. There are revelations that are simple, straightforward words. There are revelations that are, because you're doing these things in the temple, there's revelations that have to do with, why are you wiping that blood on the doorposts and lintel? And things hold together. But all of these things are, you got to look into them and beneath the surface to figure out what exactly is going on. What is God revealing? And the reason why he does that is because he wants to keep the full and clear held back until the coming of the time. So many portions, many ways.
Many fragments.
Places.
Of old. God having spoken, and it's a perfect tense, so it's complete, it's done. He did his work, he finished up talking in the old times to our fathers by the prophets. So, sets an anticipation. Verse 2. Somebody.
Has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the worlds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the worlds? The word there is actually the ages.
IMS.
Yeah. What?
Translated universe.
What?
Ages.
Okay. So in these last days. Well, right there you have a whole that's bunch of something on. That's said. You waiting for the last times?
They're here.
Yeah. Yes. It is the last days, right now, and this, I'm going to just drop the pretense of anonymity. Paul says these are the last days, and he has spoken to us in what? Through what? Through whom?
His son.
Hmm. Interesting thing is the Greek says through son. Which normally that would mean through a son. But if it's a name, you don't have the definite article. And so you just say through son. And then his son is a step two translation. This is who Jesus is. Jesus is Son of God. Jesus is God the Son. And his son. So who is it that's speaking through a son?
God the Father.
Yeah. Ah, because it says son, so... He's speaking in a son, so it's the Father speaking in a son, whom he appointed heir of all things. Okay. So, he is the heir of all, he is to hold all things were made for him, all things were made to be in relationship with him. When God the Father created the world, it was so that the world might be in relationship with his son.
Trinity.
Yeah, oh yeah. And then it's through whom indeed he made the ages.
Greek or Hebrew?
This is Greek.
Greek. Okay.
Yeah, we do not have the Hebrew of this.
Right.
Much the shame of that. Sure. Wouldn't that be cool if somebody dug that up? If somebody dug that up, you would see a stampede of pastors.
Jesus is just going to make a hand delivery.
This would make Walmart blue light special on Black Friday. Yeah,
just,
you ain't seen nothing.
It would be the curators first, though. Yeah. They would grab it.
Oh, no, it would get out. It would get out so fast.
Yeah.
You would see an excitement that you have not seen in the Christian world for a long time.
Well, like the Dead Sea Scrolls were kind of
yeah,
exciting.
But those weren't. Yeah, Dead Sea Scrolls were exciting, but if they dug up the Hebrew background of the letter to the Hebrews, oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Through whom indeed he made the ages, the times. What's this mean? Okay. What does that mean? He made the ages. He made the times. He made time itself. And this is the first indication that this thing is Pauline. And where was it written from? The indication from this is that it was written from Rome. When Paul is in Rome, living there at his own expense, and... Luke is there with him, and they're working on this, and other letters written from Rome, Colossians, Ephesians, Philippians. Those are the big three that you need to keep in mind when you're reading through the letter to the Hebrews. And why is that? Well, in Colossians, there's that wonderful passage about who is the Christ. In Ephesians, there's that wonderful passage about Christ ascending up above the highest heavens that he might fill all things. And Delitzsch comes along with two terms. He says, here you have the distinction between what is in time and in the created world and what is outside of all creation, that place where only God can exist because nothing created can be there, because things that are created have to be within creation. But in Ephesians, Paul says that Jesus ascended above all the heavens. And as we talked about this before, there are four uses of the word heaven in the Bible, and counting from the bottom. First use of heaven, second day, when the firmament was created, and there's the heavens, and the birds fly in the heavens. Second use of the word heavens is sun, moon, and stars. We call it outer space. The stars set in the heavens. Third use of the word heavens, that's where the angels dwell. It is the non-material, spiritual part of creation where angels dwell there. We can't see into the heavens. When we die, our souls are brought to heaven. That's heaven. And then, you know, Paul says, I knew a man some years ago who was caught up to the third heaven. This is not terribly mysterious if you keep the Hebrew numbering. Third heaven, he was caught up to the place where the angels live, and he saw things, and so on and so on.
New Jerusalem.
New Jerusalem's kind of a different issue, and we're heading toward Revelation. I'm going to hold off on New Jerusalem until we get there. Then there's this strange idea, and it goes way back into the Old Testament. The heavens above the heavens, where no angel is able to approach there, where nobody and nothing can exist. It is outside time, outside of creation. It is where God alone exists. And Delitzsch, being a good Lutheran Jew, he goes straight there in his discussion of Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. We still haven't gotten through one verse, two verses. Okay, we're in verse 2. But, the heaven above the heavens, the uncreated, and the two terms he uses are supratemporality.
Above time.
Yeah, outside of time. And omnitemporality.
Always, all time, everywhere.
And so in confirmation class, we were tossing these things around because confirmation class, if you get kids that are interested in stuff, ooh, you can go places. So the thing is, where is Jesus? And we...
Every time.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then we invented a new word.
Every time.
No.
Very excited about this.
He is. Every when?
Oh, every when.
Who came up with that?
Hogan?
That would have been me. I mean, he's everywhere. He's every win.
He's omni.
Yeah. I love this because it nudges your brain outside of the normal patterns. Mm-hmm. He's every win. At the same time, he exists talking to Nicodemus and walking up to Abraham's tent. And then he says to the Jews in John 8, verse 58, before Abraham was,
I am.
I am. He's everywhere.
He is.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which ties right in with the name of God as revealed to Moses. What's the name of God as revealed to Moses?
I am. That I am.
I am that I am.
Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. I am that what as I am. And this right away at the beginning of the letter to the Hebrews. Oh, by the way, something so-and-so says, Delitzsch says also, he says that the letter to the Hebrews stands in the path of theological development halfway between the letters to the Colossians and Ephesians and the writings of John. When did John write? A bit later. But, you know, development of theology can be a misused term. Then we could go raving liberal, wild-eyed, discounting a lot of things in the Bible. Or we could say, through the time of the New Testament, as the disciples write their gospels, the epistles, there is a exploring of what is there in their scriptures that would be the Old Testament and in the revelation in Jesus Christ, and they're digging further and further in, finding out more and more things. Where, whose gospel stands at the end of all of this development? That would be John.
Oh, John.
That would be John.
Gospel.
And
last survivor.
Yeah. Which means that John will drop things on you, but don't think that it is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all going off in their own different direction. This is things that were circulating through as they studied the scriptures together. And wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall at one of those meetings where Peter and Paul are tossing around scripture? Because there is so much and it is so rich. And that's also why in the letter to the Hebrews, we snag bits from Ephesians and Colossians. And as we studied through them, we said, this is some deep development and deep thought on Paul's part. Well, here we go further.
Best work in prison.
Okay, and then if he's everywhere and every when, but he exists as God, what does it mean? Through whom indeed he made the ages. Through Jesus, God created all things. He created the universe. He created the ages.
Spirit on the water.
He creates the full expanse of time. And from his perspective, he lays it all out. From our perspective, he began the creation and almost like he starts it and lets it go. That's from our perspective. God's perspective, he must create the ages. He must create every second. And within every second, he must create the things that are in the universe in that second. So, and this is a thought that I ran into years and years ago. Somebody saying that Hebrews talks about Jesus as sustaining all things. That every second of existence, the matter of the universe is kept in existence by Jesus. I'm going to go off on a little tangent here because one of the things that I read, I love this one aggregator website called News 360 that pulls in articles from everywhere, and because I entered in physics and quantum theory and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, how does gravity work? But one of the things that they have been talking about is time is quantum. What does that mean? It means that it's not analog in a flow, but punctuated. That the microseconds and down as far as the quantum units can be, that there seems to be a beep, 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 beep. Punctuation to existence, that God must, now in my terms, God must each instant be establishing the whole universe in that instant.
Very cool.
Mm.
Old faithful is pooching up.
Yeah.
So that's just a little bit of what this suggests to me. We haven't gotten to verse 3 yet? Good grief, verse 3. Wow. Verse 3.
Midnight, hey. I tell you, midnight Sunday night.
And by the way, if you're worried that every week will be only two or three verses, don't. Because as is the case with so many of the other writings, once you get the first part well established, it begins to flow quicker. But, hey, two verses, right? So what's verse say? What's verse 3 say?
He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. And he upholds the universe by the word of his power. After making purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of majesty on high.
You want to see what God looks like?
We are not going to get through to verse 4. Just telling you. So Jesus is the radiance. Of the glory of God. One of the illustrations of the Trinity is the sun, where you get the sun and the light from the sun and the warmth from the sun that you feel on your skin. Jesus is the radiance of the glory. Really? What's he saying there? The God of God, light of light, very God of very God? Yeah. He's the radiance of the glory. And
the light.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm the light.
Interesting, too, the name. Name? He has received the name.
No, that's verse 4.
It is verse 4. We're on verse 4, are we not?
Verse 3.
Oh, okay, I was going
to
say.
I said, we're not getting to verse 4 today.
It's not an article either, so it's proper name for name. Anyway.
Who being the radiance of the glory.
Peek into next week.
Peek into next week. I was thinking I'm reading ahead here in the Greek.
You got to read verse 3 in the Greek. Okay. He is the radiance of the glory and the character. I actually read you the Greek word there. the character.
Character,
yeah. Yeah, character of the hypostasis. Hypostasis.
Yeah, hypostatic union.
No.
Are we going?
He is the character of the reality. There's a Greek word, hypostasis, which we use in our Nicene Creed, being of one substance with the Father, of one hypostasis, of one essence. But the interesting thing is the first part of the word, hypo. Hypo?
Underlying?
Yeah, like a hypodermic needle under the skin. Hypostasis. And what the Greek word actually means is the underlying reality that shows through.
Underlying being stops.
Yeah.
Mine says the express image of his person.
No. That's a little rough.
Okay.
I have exact representation of his being.
Yeah. The exact representation of the underlying reality. So here's where it comes into something important.
Because this one says the same thing in this.
Here's where it comes into something important. Do you want to know what God is like? Where do you look?
Jesus.
Do you look at the hidden reality and try and figure that out? The underlying reality, the under the surface? Or do you look at what is shown?
Nature.
And what is shown would be the character that represents or shows or reveals the under the surface. He is the character that reveals what is under the surface. Now, if you look at Jesus, how can you be sure that this is the real thing? That it's not just a face that God puts on for our salvation. What is his true nature? The under the surface, the hidden stuff. How do you know what the hidden stuff is? And what Paul does here, Paul does here is he says he is the character of the revelation of the underlying reality of God. In Jesus, you have everything to perfection shown to you. There is nothing deeper. There is no hidden God underneath here who might be thinking something different. He is the character of God. What do you mean by character? Because I think it's not really necessary to change it into another word than character.
Even a child is known by what he does, his actions. So look at what God has done. He's created.
But what is the character?
Kindness, love.
No. You're saying examples of. Okay. But what is character?
The essence of being.
Who you are, right?
Right.
Your character will reveal itself in your actions. And what Jesus is, he's the character. The real stuff of what God is like. Don't go asking yourself, does the Father have different feelings, emotions, ideas than Jesus? Jesus is the character of God. You want to know what God is like? Around the world, people search out, what is God like? Here we have Jesus is the character. He is the real thing. There is no difference. You can trust that in Jesus you know all of what there is to know about what God is like. If Jesus declares love, affection, forgiveness, sometimes severity on certain things, that's the character. That's what God is like. So that is given to us in Jesus. Okay. So God spoke to us in a Son, in His Son, appointed heir of all things, so that all things should be in relationship to Jesus. Through Jesus, He created the times and the universe. He is the radiance of the glory. He is the character of the reality of God. Okay. Next phrase, and bearing all things by the word of the power of Him. He upholds everything. He holds things together. He carries the universe through the word of power. Through His word of power, or through the word of His power. What did He do, having done all this? Because there's a part two. Because all of this part one has to do with who He is in relationship to us in creation and revelation. But the next part comes along. The Greek word is katharismon. English word, cathartic.
Catharsis.
It means purification that involves some suffering.
Dying.
Yeah. But through the purification, through the cleansing of sins, having made cleansing of sins, having done that, He sat at the right hand, that's literal Greek, at the right hand of the greatness, the majesty in high places. Okay, having made purification for sins, He sat down at the right hand of the majesty in the high places. What are we talking about there? Which is, when did that happen? Sitting at the right hand of God.
At the resurrection.
When
He rose at the ascension.
Ascension. Yeah. Okay. So it is the ascension, sitting down at the right hand of God, at the right hand of the majesty in high places. Which, again, that's a Pauline thought from Ephesians. Just in case you forgot, Ephesians. Chapter 4? Yeah, chapter 4. Verse 10, chapter 4, verse 10. He who descended is the one who also ascended far above all the heavens, that He might fill all things. Back to verse 8. Therefore it says, when He ascended on high, He led a host of captives, and He gave gifts to men.
Led captivity captive?
Yep.
That's different than a host.
Lots of military imagery in there. Paul's mixing his metaphors wildly when he gets to that verse, led captivity captive.
That one is misunderstood a lot.
Oh, yes. But the session at the right hand of God, where is the right hand of God?
In the highest honor.
Yeah. Where's the right hand of God? What's the
fourth heaven?
Small catechism answer to that. Everywhere.
Everywhere and everywhere.
And everywhere. So this, in the high places, you cannot get any higher than that. It is ruling all things, filling all things. It is being throughout the entire creation. Throughout the entire creation. What was that word in the... through whom he made the ages.
Yeah, amen.
The creation, the ages, the full expanse of everything. All of time, all of existence, and he is seated at the right hand of the majesty in that high place where he can be everywhere and every when.
Can we say every known?
Yeah.
Says a school teacher.
Yeah, so he is there in such a way that it's not only looking down on, it is also right there, intimately present in every moment of existence, every experience, and then not only in the physical things, but also there within the soul, every thought. It's like he doesn't just hear the prayers, he's there in and through the prayers.
So hard for our minds to wrap up.
Yeah.
I wish my prayers were better.
Ooh, let somebody read verse 4.
Oh, Paula.
Yeah, let's see if I can focus. Having become as much superior to the angels as name, because the is missing in the Greek, as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs.
It's not Hashem in this point, because Paul is going a whole different direction on this.
Why did he drop the article? Capitalized name.
No.
It's article.
You got to go to Philippians and to Colossians on this one. And we may get there today and we may get there next week. So much better, becoming so much better than the angels. How can Jesus become so much better than the angels? I thought he was God from the beginning.
He became man, so he's also fully man. Both fully God and fully man.
Pop quiz.
Uh-oh.
God-man cards. Does this verse speak of Jesus as God or as man? Okay?
Can you answer both? Or just?
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, okay.
But this one in particular. From the end of Matthew, when Jesus says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. God or man?
Nope. That's
God.
Man.
All authority on earth, so man.
All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me.
Has been given means man. Because as God, he already had it.
Oh.
Exactly. Turn the clock back about 1,700 years and get to Athanasius against Arius, the Nicene Creed. Is Jesus God, or is Jesus kind of godly? Is Jesus true God, or is he a divine being? Is he God first rank, or is he God second rank? And the controversy in part went to that verse, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And Arius, the ancient world's Jehovah's Witness, the father of all Jehovah's Witnesses, he said, well, because he says all authority has been given to me, therefore he is a second rank deity. Now, if he is a second rank deity, when you look at Jesus, do you see the true stuff that is truly God? Do you see the exact character of the underlying reality?
Not if he's second rank.
Not, no, right.
Exactly. It took about 50 years for the people of the ancient world to wake up to what Arius was saying and wake up to what Athanasius was saying and realize this is what's at stake. If he is not the exact character, if you don't get the true stuff of what's in the underlying being, then how do you know you're saved? Just because Jesus says? Well, he would only be a second rank deity. So you don't really know.
Because first rank deity may change his mind or not.
Better do more good work, so you might be destined to damnation no matter what you do. Everything becomes uncertain if you read it that way. And so Athanasius comes along and says, well, Arius, this shows that you don't know Greek, you don't know logic, you don't know reasoning, and you don't know God. You don't know the scriptures, because if you knew any of these things, you would know that this is speaking of Jesus as man. As God, he already has all authority in heaven and on earth. As God, already has it from eternity. But what he is saying here is that he, our human brother, having earned forgiveness of sins for us, having done all of that for us, having walked with his disciples, having been the one that John says, we reached out and we touched him, we touched the eternal word. How do we get our minds around that? That this one is the one who truly is the revelation of God, and as a human being now, as your brother, he has all authority in heaven and on earth. So you come to him in prayer, you are not coming to someone who cannot sympathize with your weakness. You are coming to the one who experienced every difficulty in life, including, I don't know whether God's hearing my prayers. Heaven seems to be closed. All I see is darkness all around. What am I to do? He went through that. So how could you think that he doesn't understand your troubles and your difficulties in life? How could you think that he doesn't understand what it means to pray? To throw a word up to heaven and not know how that will be received or answered? How can you think that he doesn't understand the agony of uncertainty? How can you even think that he doesn't understand what it means to be found guilty and bear shame and judgment? This is the one who rules all things. So, where were we? How did we get to that? Oh, becoming better than the angels. Okay? This is what it means for him to be exalted to the right hand of God. It's not just he went back where he was before. He carries us in himself. into that heaven above the heavens where the reality is there. Everything else is the revelation, but there's the reality, and now he's carried you in his body into that underlying reality. And Paul says in Ephesians, Ephesians 2, verses 5 and 6. Even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ, by grace you have been saved, verse 6, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus.
Wow.
And then, in Colossians, he says, but raise your minds to heaven where you are seated with Christ. This is part of your reality. You are in your connection with Jesus Christ. You are in the underlying reality place. Okay. By becoming so much better than the angels as he has inherited, which the inherited goes back to verse 2, the Son whom he appointed heir of all things, same Greek word.
Name.
No. He is the inheritance.
Oh, okay,
just
fine.
The inheritance. Remember we said back in verse 2 that the inheritance means that God created the whole universe to be in relationship with Jesus. That's the inheritance. It is the gift that God the Father gives to his Son Jesus. The whole universe to be in relationship with him. Okay? He has inherited a more excellent than them name. Now we're name.
Now
okay?
We're name.
Now we're name. Okay. What is this name business? And Dillich takes us on a little tour where he says, what's this more excellent name? Is it one of the names of the Old Testament? Branch? Messiah? Nah. Is it Son? Could be. But now extend beyond that. What does it mean, Son? Where does God the Father use the term Son?
Baptism.
This is my Son.
Transfiguration.
Love it.
With whom I am well pleased. Okay? Why is God the Father voicing with whom I am well pleased? Is it because something happened back in eternity? No. It's much more specific. Then I'm going to push us further along here. Take us to John, who will define this in just a few verses. With whom I am well pleased. For this reason the Father loves me, because
I give up my life.
Yeah, John chapter 10. Because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me. I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. So when you hear the term name, or name that is above every name, you have to bring all of that in. God the Father looking at his son Jesus and saying, has there ever been one like him who would, though being God, being in the form of God, existing as God, who would set everything aside, make himself nothing, take the form of a servant, being found in human likeness, become obedient unto death, even death on the cross. And I'm going to put emotion into this. God the Father looks at this, that Jesus does. He's known it's coming, planned from eternity, but for Jesus to actually give himself over into death, separation, the darkness, being cut off from his Father. You think it's astonishing for us? How about for the Father? Has there ever been such a one? That's why back in the Old Testament, Isaiah in particular will say the words of God the Father, behold my servant. This is the name. There is no one else who has done this. That's his name. And it goes into the book of Revelation. And John picks up a name for Jesus in the book of Revelation. What's he call him? He calls him the... begins with an L.
Lamb.
The Lamb. That's who he is.
We have so much to be thankful for this Thanksgiving.
Hey, we got four verses. We ran long, but we got four verses in.